Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 13, The Very Secret Diary.
Oh boy. The Very Secret Diary.
Dude, this one I feel like... Last time, I thought we were going to go long, and I feel like for sure this one's going to go the same way.
I know.
This is such a big chapter.
It's a very important chapter. And I will say right off the cuff that, like, if I had any layer of, like, cynicism about the series ever, I think one of the big things that I've often, like, kind of stuck my foot down a little bit hard on is the belief that the design of the Horcrux concept was not conceived as of Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
And I might be backtracking on that position.
I had a similar note in this chapter. I was like, ooh, is this the Horcrux acting upon Harry?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know, in a way that, like, I think it's so small and, like, circumspect that it's like it's not something that it stands out as, like, a major plot point, but there's a couple of what otherwise might be, like, received as, like, throwaway lines where I was like, oh, man,
maybe
okay,
they're not.
Maybe it is a real thing. Like, maybe yeah, the Horcrux was dialed in from the very beginning, because I think there's a couple of instances where Harry's relationship with the diary is unique in a way that really can't be explained almost any other way.
Yeah, I agree. It does seem, and I'm sure we will get to it. It is a little bit suspicious.
It's a little suspicious. So yeah. I'm excited for that, because if anything, there's nothing I like more than being proven wrong.
Yeah,
you know, it's
yeah,
like, it's like, okay, okay.
And this is, like, the advantage of reading it this way, I think, and, like, diving in, because it's like, it's seriously line by line. And there's some other points where I was like, I never realized this exact thing before. Like, especially, like, one of the very last things that happens in the chapter, I was like, you know, I don't think I realized that.
Okay, well, I'm fascinated to hear about it.
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
I mean, you're definitely right. Like, I think it's even something like the podcast premise in general is that, like, you and I have studied Harry Potter so kind of aggressively throughout the past decade.
Yeah,
in the name of, like, crafting all of our theories and mm-hmm, stuff like that, and so we're both on, like, a kind of, like, constant carousel of re-listening through the stories. We're always on the lookout for, like, little details that we missed in the past. But I think the thing that's so easy to glaze over, like, for example, like, I listen a lot, like, on the weekends if I'm doing, like, yard work. And so, like, I'll have Audible playing in my ears. It's at 2x speed. I know the story inside out. So, like,
right.
I mean, I could fall asleep and miss 40 minutes, pick it back up, and I'm not even...
Right, you didn't miss anything.
I'm not remotely
yeah,
lost.
Your brain just fills in the gap.
It does, yes. Yeah. It fills in the gap, but that is what's so different. It's, I'm like, well, we say we're experts, but
I know,
here,
like,
I am being like, wait, what?
Do I remember this line of dialogue at all?
Right, yeah. So that's very important all of a sudden.
Jeez.
So very enlightening. But before we dive on in, we have a couple of fun announcements.
We do have a couple of fun little announcements here. So first of all, we announced earlier, like, way back at the beginning of the year, that we were launching our Wizarding Candle Club.
Yes, indeed.
Where we would have yep, a candle of the month. And we launched with our pretty obvious candle, which was, you guys, thank you so much for, if you've bought a pretty obvious candle, I hope you like, that's, like, one of my favorite ones we've ever done. But this one, this month is extra special. The April candle of the month is literally called the Gryffindor.
This
is the Gryffindor candle. Like, not Gryffindor, the Gryffindor. Like the podcast.
Like the podcast.
This is the official podcast candle.
Ugh.
And it is like a sugary lemon smell. So it's supposed to, like, remind you of the headmaster's office behind the Gryffindor.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it honestly, it's one of those two where it's like, the lemon scent is really, it's really, really nice. It's like so subtle. I mean, yeah, you said the word sugary, which I think can come like people can, you can imagine, like, sort of like an over the topness, but it's not.
The sugary part is, like, it's very subtle.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, I mean, if you like that, like any of, like, the citrus flavored candles,
it's more citrus than yeah, sugar, but the sugar's there.
It's there. You're gonna love it. So definitely go and check it out at wizardingcandles.com.
Yes, and of course you can just buy the candle by itself, or you can subscribe to get a brand new fresh scent every single month sent to your door. And as ever, inside of the candle, after you finish burning them down, there's like a little collectible charm at
there
the
is
bottom.
Indeed. Yes, yes.
So a lot of fun there. And then just a reminder, in case you're still thinking about it, tickets are already on sale for Through the Griffin Tour, our upcoming tour down the East Coast from Boston to New York to Philadelphia to D.C. So if you want to check out those, there's links in the description there. We're going to be coming doing live episodes of the podcast, and we have mapped it out, and it is going to work out perfectly that the first date on the tour will be the start of Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yes. I know. It's working out so well. Like, we did, like, okay, I wish we could say we planned that, but we didn't.
We didn't, yeah.
But it did work out.
It worked out so great.
Extremely well. So it's like, if you're there for, like, even, like, the Boston show, it's like, you're going to see us, like, crack the book.
I know. I'm very excited. The Boston show especially is chapter one, Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yes.
And then
yes.
The next three chapters. So if you're in New York, that'll be chapter two. If you are in Philadelphia, that'll be chapter three. And if you are in DC, that'll be chapter four.
Yeah. So if you really want to see me in particular squirm, the everything to do with Aunt Marge it's the Umbridge effect. It's like, it's too real. It's too like you've known someone like this, but there's one line in particular where she's referring to Harry's mom that just makes me so angry. And so I just hate it. I hate that she says it. I hate that she refers that way. If I was Harry, I would have blown her up too.
Yes.
Like, it's just like, oh. So anyway, it's going to be a hooting and hollering good
time. Yeah, so come do the Azkaban tour with us.
Yeah.
No Dementors.
No Dementors. None whatsoever.
It's going to be great. But anyway, with those tiny announcements out of the way, let's dive into the very secret diary. And what is like, the chapter art on this one is one of the dwarves singing the Valentine, presumably to Harry. And like, It looking at the dwarf makes me cringe, not because it's like bad artwork, but because I can feel the embarrassment from here, staring at the image. The thought of this happening to me is so bad.
I know. Yeah. So this is interesting for like a myriad of reasons, but like one, I think this is the first and only ever reference that we get in the Wizarding world to dwarves.
Yeah,
existing.
I think so. Yeah.
Which is always strange because I think in my head I have turned them into gnomes, like from the Weasley's garden.
Oh, but yeah, still not that.
But they're not that.
Right. So we have gnomes, dwarves, elves, and goblins, all four completely different things.
Completely different entities. Yeah. So dwarves only ever show up inside of this chapter. They seem pretty I'm thinking of like stout, but like a rugby player stout, you know, like very strong.
What's interesting to me is how go with the flow they are with the assignment, combined with how like rough and tumble they are.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Like it seems like they are otherwise probably found to be like rude or maybe not like a pleasant experience, but for some reason maybe they're just, you know, big fans of Gilderoy Lockhart.
Indeed.
And given the opportunity to be involved in any of his projects is just
like, I'm there.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I mean
just worth getting after. But you're absolutely right. I mean it's cringe-tacular. This practice that we'll see inside of this chapter of delivering Valentines, I believe, and I can't even remember if it was something that was like maybe just like 1 or 2 years of my high school experience, but I feel like you could buy like a rose or like a carnation or something for like $2 to $4.
And yeah.
Like you could have it delivered to like your Valentine.
Yeah. I think like versions of exactly what Lockhart sets up does exist, and possibly to the point where it is like people will like go around the school and like sing a song or something, you
Ooh.
Know, like I want to say maybe when I was in sixth grade, this was a thing, or like I know like around like Christmas, like the choir department would like go caroling or something.
Okay.
And I would bet that there are schools where this is just a tradition and it's like, it's Valentine's Day. So guess what? You know, it's fundraising for the choir. If you want us to go sing us a song to someone, we will.
We will.
And it will be, and when I read it, that like he's arranged this, I'm like, it's not really the worst idea.
No.
Like, it's not, like, honestly, he throws it together kind of in a snap, too. It's like, this isn't the worst thing he does. Like, it is horribly embarrassing for Harry. And clearly, like, if he was a more competent teacher, I think everyone would be on board with it.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, indeed.
But at this point, he is offended, like, everyone.
Exactly it. Yeah, yeah. I think he refers to Flitwick. He's like, you sly dog.
It's like,
what on earth is going on there?
Like, he's also like encouraging people to ask Snape about love potions, which are just like so against school rules.
I know, yeah. It's like even Slughorn, who's like a little fast and loose with rules, is sort of like, yeah, this is the most dangerous potion in the room.
Yeah.
You know, so like that would literally be like, you know, going in front of your high school and being like, can go ask any of your chemistry teachers so they can whip up some crystal meth for you.
Right.
It's like, yeah, you sly dog. It's like, no.
No, don't do that. Gilderoy, yeah, what are you doing? Yeah. Stop it.
It's like, that's really bad. Why would you suggest that to the students?
Yeah.
They're going to ask.
Yeah.
Anyway, so but yeah, no, you're right. I do think there's a total like tonal shift I think attached to, because honestly, even like the Great Hall, it seems like you know, when Harry goes in for like the Christmas holidays, I think there's like warm snowflakes that fall and dissolve on your face or whatever, and it's like it seems so like fun and cozy and joyous. And then like, you know, when he walks in the Great Hall this time, there's like little like heart-shaped confetti that's like falling in his bacon, and it's like one of those like logistical things where it's like, on the one hand it's really fun, and then on this hand it's like it's really not fun. My perspective has changed, and I'm not into it this time,
right?
Even though it's not really altogether that different, so
nope.
Anyway, we'll get to it in due course.
We shall. So I think in just going right into the chapter here, I want to say there's a mistake on the the second sentence.
Okay, where
it's talking about Hermione being in the hospital. It says there was a flurry of rumor about her disappearance, and I'm pretty sure it should say there was a furry of rumor about her disappearance.
Whoa, air horn sounds. Nailed it. I was looking at the second sentence, and I'm like, I don't know what he's talking about. What am I missing here?
Oh man, yeah. No, that's all.
No,
taking the opportunity to make a nice corny joke there.
Yeah, no, that was amazing. That was amazing for the people in the back. Yeah, no, I love it. But yeah, so Hermione, it sounds like, honestly, her apology's gone wrong. It's a good thing that Madame Pomfrey is not one to ask questions, because a several week recovery time effectively in
it's
the
like
hospital,
a month.
Yeah, it's like,
because they do it over Christmas break.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And she doesn't get out until the start of February.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, it is
crazy.
This is a serious affliction that she's found herself with.
Yeah.
So, good to know that she has slowly de-whiskerified, or it says her spirits were greatly improved by the fact that all of her hair had gone from her face and her eyes were turning slowly back to brown.
Yeah, that's good. I love how, like, I feel this is a chapter where I feel like Ron is completely on fire the entire time.
Yeah. We had a conversation. Yeah, I agree with you completely.
Yeah.
We had a conversation about Deathly Hallows, how Ron like immediately sort of seems to like detect something intangible in the air about like why all of a sudden like the taboo may be in place, and he's like, he's always been the least to accept like just saying Voldemort's name, but like he's like, no, like, you know, given the circumstances, like let's say you know who,
yeah, and he's like, it feels cursed to something,
right?
And
right,
it's just like, and he's totally right.
He is. I mean, nail on the head. And it was so funny because me and you just talked about it yesterday.
Yeah.
And as I'm reading this chapter, I was like, man, Ron maybe has like like a killer instinct for this.
I was like, there is a video to be had about like Ron's like secret power or something, where he has like his instincts are just like good.
Yes, like very super sensory, for sure.
Like on like a magical level or something, it seems.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Not just like he's got good instincts. Like there's something like intangible that he's like able to grasp in the air or something.
No, I know. I mean, it would be really interesting to learn if there was like an additional piece of magic. And now that we've like caught notice of it,
I know.
I'll be curious if we pick up any more of
like
it.
Like nose to the ground on it. But like, so anyway, I like his, even this first page here, he's just like, if I had sprouted whiskers, I'd take a break from work. And it's just like, Ron, that is a good call. That's a good call. But I like how Hermione's like, don't be silly, Ron. I've got to keep up. Like, for real, dude, being a cat is not an excuse for not doing my work. What?
Hermione, for as like analytical as she is so unfazed by the unusual world that is the wizarding world.
Yeah.
You know, it's like she just like, whatever. So I turn into a cat. It's like, as far as I was concerned, I was a muggle for most of my life, and I'm just now adapting to magic, and I'm only in my second year. But so I was a cat for like a month. Whatever. No big deal.
Right. I'm embarrassed. I don't want anyone to see me at all. But like, I got to do homework.
Got to do homework, obviously.
Come on.
But so then I this was another thing I was curious about in regards to Ron, is that the next thing is that they're visiting her in the hospital room. They see something gold sticking out from underneath Hermione's pillow. Yeah. It's a get well card from Lockhart, of which 2/3 of everything that Lockhart writes is basically just his like signature.
So oh my gosh.
To Miss Granger, wishing you a speedy recovery from your concerned teacher, Professor Gilderoy Lockhart, Order of Merlin, 3rd class, honorary member of the Dark Forces Defense League, and 5-time winner of the Witch Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award.
It's like, so much.
It's so over the top.
It's like she already knows who you are, dude.
Yes, yes.
It's like he can't take, he's like on a like 1-to-1, he's willing to be like, to win fans over on a 1-to-1 basis.
Yes, yes. You know? It's. I mean, and maybe this is like one of those things like where Lockhart himself knows he's not convincing everybody, and so the people he can convince, he's like very locked in on.
Very locked in on, indeed. I also highlighted this because it's just hilarious, and I was like, how, like, if, because we know Harry does detention with him, and he's like writing out his own letters and stuff, and presumably he is writing like all of this every single time. You'd think you could magically do it or somehow.
Sure.
But I guess not. So presumably he is writing out this entire title on every single thing. Because Hermione is a person he already knows.
Right.
You know, like to people who are his fans, of course he is writing this entire title out every single time, right?
Yeah, you would think so.
Okay,
yeah,
so I was like, how long does it take him to write this out? And like, so I got my own pen and paper out and set a timer to see how fast I could write it.
No, you did not. What did you get?
So just to write out Order of Merlin, 3rd class, honorary member of the Dark Force Defense League, and 5-time winner of Witch Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award, it took me 42 seconds to write it.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
So this is someone, yeah, because you're right. He could magically be doing it, which makes me think what he really enjoys doing, because he spends like 4 hours with Harry doing this. I think what he really enjoys doing is basking in the awesomeness of himself.
Yeah.
And just, and literally like just being able to like dip himself into, like fully immerse himself in this experience.
Yes.
It's like, you don't have to do it this way, but it's like, but I like to.
I know, it's right? Like why doesn't it, it's almost crazy to me that he doesn't have some version of like a quick quotes quill or something.
Oh yeah, similar
to, you know,
to,
like that, Rita Skeeter.
Right, like Rita Skeeter. Yeah. But like that's the thing, is I think Rita Skeeter is like, she's fast and loose with the facts. Like I think she doesn't really like super care. That's where my thought is, like I think Lockhart, it's like he doesn't have anything important to actually spend his time doing.
Right.
What he's obsessed with is being famous.
Yeah.
And so it's like, of course he doesn't mind spend, I mean, because yeah, at 42 seconds, I mean, that would mean you're getting maybe like, you know, obviously 60 minutes in an hour. That's
like if you're writing just writing the signature takes then
like
66% of the hour.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So you, it's just like, what's
this? Oh my gosh.
It's so ridiculous. But so then my next question is that like Ron has sort of already brought up that he thinks that Lockhart's a fraud on numerous occasions. So Ron looks up at Hermione disgusted and asks, you sleep with this under your pillow? And then immediately upon leaving, he says to Harry, is Lockhart the smarmiest bloke you've ever met or what? And so I mean, I do believe that Ron is like, you know, he's got his like his you know, number or whatever, like he's figured him out. But I'm also curious, like was this maybe like our first little morsel of like Ron jealousy?
I also picked up on that. I was like, is this the first time Ron is ever just like the teensiest bit interested in Hermione? Like the first, like maybe he doesn't even know.
Right.
It's just
right.
Like he couldn't acknowledge it, but like part of him is jealous that Hermione like has like is sleeping with this letter.
Yes. I mean, yeah. But that is so the way of like a 12-year-old too. It's
right.
It's like you feel jealousy, but you don't know how to identify the jealousy.
Right.
So it comes across more as like resentment or anger or something else.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to sort of see that there. But I was like, oh, that's another one of those where, you know, I think we even said it in like last week's episode. We've always been like team Hermione or whatever, which, you know, it's not a hill I would die on or anything like that. But like, it is funny to see like, okay, maybe Ron did really have like, you know, a bit of
right.
that interest from the beginning.
Right. Like maybe there was more to go on there.
Right. And the other thing that's crazy is that also inside of this chapter is supposedly Ginny expressing her early affection for Harry as
yes,
well.
So as
more,
well.
More on that in a few minutes, but that would be, I mean, I don't think we can quite call it foreshadowing, but it would be be like an interesting nod to the eventual pairings.
Yes, you're right.
And Ginny and Harry. So, anyway, though, so then as they're walking away, this was just a piece of trivia that I was like, okay, good one to remember. It says Ron was just saying that he wished he asked Hermione how many rat tails you're supposed to add to hair raising potion when there was an angry outburst from the floor above that reached their ears. So that's just like one of those like, what do you add to hair raising potion?
Rat tails. Worm tails. Basically.
That's
I wonder if that is that any does that. Is that a sly nod to Peter Pettigrew being like a hair-raising character or something?
I could see that.
Yeah,
I could see
like that. It's rat tail because he's called Wormtail, which is what a rat's tail is.
Right. Yes. I mean, he is pretty hair-raising. He's pretty creepy.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So maybe that is a slight nod to that in some way.
Right.
Let's see. Then they hear Filch complaining about having to mop all night, which again doesn't make sense because magic exists. So the fact that you're making this poor man do Muggle labor in your Magic Castle is terrible.
Yep. But once again, so this is what I was curious about is that me and you have been identifying like the potential laser vision coming from the basilisk
because right.
Like the scorch marks, the melted Colin Creevy's camera, Nearly Headless Nick being like
blackened
by the attack. And so as this one was unfolding a little bit and there's like water all over the floor and it's coming from Moaning Myrtle's bathroom, it was sort of like one of those like, okay, keep on the lookout for any potential, flame.
Burn marks.
Yeah, burn marks or something. So obviously I don't think that there were any in this particular instance, but there's also not an accompanying attack.
No, there's not.
Although, okay, so here's an interesting question because a lot of water flowing everywhere, which makes you think basilisk, but is it really just Moaning Myrtle freaking out because the diary has been thrown?
Oh, yeah, the water here is because of Myrtle
This isn't
the basilisk this time.
Okay, so no basilisk situation. This is just Myrtle causing a ruckus.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting that Ginny tries to get rid of the diary in the bathroom where the chamber is.
That is sort of interesting, because it almost even this to me feels like the obvious, like when you go back and look at it again, I don't know if you can call it foreshadowing, but like, you know, the fact that the diary was being thrown at Myrtle and Myrtle is the victim of the basilisk attack and the diary is Tom Riddle for all intents and purposes. It's like everyone's returning to the scene of the crime. And
they really are. I guess maybe you would try and destroy it there because the bathroom's out of order, so like no one would like find it or something.
And we talked about that earlier in the chapter. I that was like one of those where I was like, did we just glaze over the fact that this is an out of order bathroom, or is this the first time it's ever actually specifically said the out of order bathroom?
No, it is because they say they like ignore it as always, so it's said out of order the whole time. It's like what is out of order about it? Or is it just that they don't want students there because of the attack?
Because of the attack or because of Moaning Myrtle or
because
something.
Like what could they possibly not fix? You know, why can't they just repair this bathroom fixed?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Why should it ever be out of order?
It doesn't seem like it should
be a problem.
A problem. Yeah, but either way, I mean, maybe it's just one of those things where they're just like, it's not pleasant in there. Just don't go deal with it. There's another bathroom one floor up.
It's haunted.
Yeah, right. It's haunted. And this is a castle that's definitely not full of ghosts, so they don't want you to encounter a ghost.
Yeah.
It is full of ghosts. That was sarcasm.
Right. Yeah. So let's see. So they go in there. They talk to Myrtle. Harry makes the very fair point. But it can't hurt you if someone throws something at you. I mean, you just go right through you.
It says, but it can't hurt you if someone throws something at you, said Harry reasonably. I mean, it would just go right through you, wouldn't it? I wrote a note and I was like, is the narrator of the book suggesting something about Harry's tone here?
Yeah.
Like, because it is one of those things where it's like, in my mind, it's like one of those where it's like, if you're speaking to a ghost and their lack of solid statedness is an aspect of their existence at this point in time, it might be considered a little bit like lacking in respect to be like, well, what's it matter to you if somebody throws something at you? It can't hurt you. It's like, it's the principle of the thing.
Right.
Like,
yeah, you still shouldn't throw things at people.
Right. It's like when people throw things at me, it's not always the physical impact that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's the fact that they thought to throw something at me.
Exactly. But apparently the narrator disagrees.
But the narrator's like, completely reasonable question.
No. It's always okay to throw stuff at ghosts. They can't feel it.
Right. Do you ever have any feeling as to who is narrating the story? Is there ever anything you give any thought to?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I know. Yeah. It's like one of those. It's like it almost feels like it could be like a theory in and of itself. It's like, who is telling the story?
Who's writing this down?
Who knew everything?
Right. Yeah.
Hermione. Maybe.
There is the very meta theory that works with this book that Harry himself is like the real Gilderoy Lockhart.
Oh, sure.
And that, like, so you have Harry Potter, like, instead of, like, so Gilderoy is like a character inside of the Harry Potter books, but like the real life Harry Potter is then like the one writing the books.
Oh, right.
And he's writing all these fantastical tales about things he's done, like Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets and Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yes,
and he's just written himself as the hero.
It's just gadding with ghouls. But then I this is always like my other, you know, to take it one step further, it's always one of those where it's like, you can't, like, even Harry doing his best to make himself sound humble and important can't skate past the important things that Hermione has solved.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like Hermione is so absolutely vital to everyone's success.
Yeah.
That it's sort of like, it's like, should it be Hermione?
Yeah.
Is she our real hero? But anyway, so yeah, so that being said, I just thought that was a funny question. Because I highlighted the reasonably. That's really what made it stand out to me. I was like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like almost like a little bit of opinion
right.
shaking its way through there.
You're right. So next up, there's this line. This chapter is a masterclass in the characters like getting new information and being so close to getting the right, like the vital information, but like whiffing on it left and right. Like,
yes.
They are really starting to get close here. Like, so Harry asks, who threw it at you anyway? And it's just like, I don't know. I was just sitting there, you, Ben. And it's just like, like if Myrtle had just said, Ginny Weasley, you know, it'd be
right.
Like, oh, like, oh, we were close.
We should totally McGoatly go and talk to that girl.
Yeah.
Turns out one of us is related to her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that very, just nearly had it.
Nearly
but
had
just
it.
Doesn't get, they're going to keep missing in this chapter.
Right. Okay.
As we move on.
So here's something that I find to be kind of interesting though. So, basically then Moaning Myrtle points out that the diary is over there. It got washed out. They go and look and it says, it had a shabby black cover and was as wet as everything else in the bathroom. Does that stand out to you at all when you consider the fact that the other remarkable thing that happens with the diary in this chapter is that ink spills all over?
That it gets doused in liquid.
Yes, and it's like completely like undamaged by all the liquid.
Yes, it is surprising to me. It seems like the diary should be dry right now.
Yes, like and I don't even think it would be an issue because Harry sort of like keeps it despite there not being any real obvious reason to keep it, but maybe that's also part of it. But like if it was dry, like just laying in a puddle of water, it might be like enough for Harry to be like, that's interesting. Maybe this is worth looking at. But no, it's just completely soaking wet. But then this is where Ron's instincts come into play.
Yes.
And it says, Ron suddenly flung out an arm to hold him back. What? Said Harry. Are you crazy? Said Ron. It could be dangerous. And I just wrote, good instincts, Ron.
I just said the same thing. Ron has good instincts.
Yes. It's like, yes, you are all over it. And this is another one of those, we've mentioned a couple of times before, like the possibility of like the Weasleys taking after their dad. But like, you know, he is in the misuse of Muggle artifacts department.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it could be the case that this is almost like Ron taking after Arthur a little bit where it's sort of like, yeah, you know, you can't judge every book by its cover, like in this case, quite literally.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a book. But it is interesting to me that he's sort of like, no, things can be dangerous even if they don't seem dangerous. So he's totally on top of it.
Yeah, I mean he like, and then he goes on to have a bunch of examples about how books have been used notoriously, which is interesting the way in which the books he describes work. That like just by like having the readers having laid eyes on them, like whatever enchantment as them, like whatever spell is on them is like then cast on the reader.
Yes.
You know,
yep.
Which is like, it makes you wonder if you know, the Harry Potter books themselves have thieves charms on them. Everyone loves them so much.
Right. I know. We just can't stop reading them.
Yeah.
Here we are. I mean, so you and I would have read these books for the first time at approximately, I would have been like 8 or 9, which would have placed you at like 10.
Yeah. Something like that.
And here we are. You're 36 and I'm 34.
Yep.
So it's like, yeah, crap. crap, crap, crap. Yeah. But yeah, so specifically, we'll give you the examples that Ron gives because I think they're also good trivia. So let's see here. Everyone who reads Sonnets of a Sorcerer spoken limericks for the rest of their lives.
I love it. Everyone. So it's like there's just a whole group of people out there speaking in limericks.
Right.
Which are not sonnets.
Distinctly different forms of poetry.
Yeah.
And then there's also some old witch in Bath who had a book that you could never stop reading. You just had to wander around with your nose in it, trying to do everything one-handed. This is always sort of like alluded to me to like you've almost seen this person out in the wild before who's just kind of like got their nose stuck in a book.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they're like that they are out in the wild, that they're out grocery shopping or they're out like at a coffee shop. It's like, I mean, they're just like, you know, sort of like trapped away. So that to me almost felt like a little bit of like a little like wink.
To those like people,
the serial readers out there. Yep.
I do love how like Ron, like very is, you know, despite his good instinct, despite his list of examples and despite him actually winning Harry over, he's like, all right. Harry is like, okay, fine. You've got a point. But YOLO, let's do it anyway.
I am the chosen one.
And actually, I say YOLO, which if you don't know, means you only live once. But of course, for Harry, it's more like you only live three times.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Defy his death at least twice.
Yeah.
For certainly. Very impressive. So anyway, but yeah. So then we start to get like a little bit of like some early information. This was oddly more momentous than I expected it to be for myself. But basically, it's just looking at the year on the cover, told him that it's 50 years old, which must mean this is almost like more of a planner, possibly. Did you get that vibe at all?
It was interesting. Like whenever I've had like a journal or something, it hasn't been laid out with like dates on it or anything.
Yeah, like a journal to me is more like just a blank book.
Yeah, to me it's more like a blank book, and so this seemed like it must have been bought to be used in the year that it was purchased in.
Yes.
So you can probably assume that it was bought like in January or no, but that wouldn't make sense because why would Tom Riddle have been at Vauxhall Road in January? I guess he could have bought it over Christmas break. No, he definitely would have stayed at Hogwarts.
He definitely would have stayed. Because even in this chapter, he's asking if he can stay over summer break. Yeah, so it's just kind of odd.
Yeah, so I guess maybe he just bought a diary halfway through the year to use. Or I guess some journals or planners will start like in June or something.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he could have
bought... That'll be like an academic one or something. Yeah.
Right, the summer break before. I think at some point in time when we learn more about Tom Riddle later, it says that like he goes off into London on his own, even as like a young boy before he's been recruited. So I wonder, I mean, especially considering the fact that this diary is important enough for him to convert into a Horcrux, it must be the case that something attached to the occasion of him going to Vauxhall Road and buying it from a Muggle shop was important enough to him that it was deemed worthy of becoming a Horcrux.
Right.
Like, it's almost like, what kind of dark thing did he do that day?
Right. You know, that like he bought the deck. Because it's also surprising he doesn't just buy a diary from like a wizard shop.
Exactly.
Because he'd have access to them by then.
Yes, he would. Yeah.
Because unless he just wanted to like not even be seen buying it or something, you know, by other wizards. Like, maybe wizard diaries are already magically enchanted and he needed like a plain one.
What would you say about the possibility of it reflecting his half-bloodedness? Like it's like he's doing like a very pure blood endeavor by tucking his soul inside of it, but he's tucking it inside of like a muggle
artifact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's only special because of me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's like, it's him that makes it special.
Right.
Okay. I could see his logic winding itself around that a little bit.
Yep.
But of course on the front, it does say TM Riddle, which I will say that I feel like the anagram is the anagramification of, Tom Marvolo Riddle as a kid was, you know, I'm like looking forward to it happening again. Dude, even though I know what happened.
It is just one of the best little things.
It is.
It is so fun.
It's such a glorious review.
And I was gonna complain that he like, why doesn't he write out Tom M. Riddle or just Tom Riddle on the front? Why would you? This isn't like necessarily helpful to get the diary returned to you.
Oh,
to
sure.
T M. Riddle. But at this point, he could already be thinking, like, I don't like the name Tom, or, oh, that's interesting. He doesn't like the name Tom. So he just puts, like,
T
instead of Tom.
Right.
That's interesting. Himself, or he doesn't want people to be able to, or he's like afraid people will know who Tom Riddle is in relation. Like, he doesn't want it to be able to trace back to himself later on.
Yep. Yep. But, I can see that.
But
well,
I still put my name on it? I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, we know eventually he's attempting to leave that identity behind.
Yeah.
So maybe keeping it like a little bit more under wraps makes
sense. I will complain, however, that two sentences later, Ron says, I know that name, T.M. Riddle. Like, why doesn't the trophy room award say Tom Riddle on it?
You know? That's a very good question.
Why does it say T.M. Riddle?
It wouldn't say T.M.
It wouldn't.
It just wouldn't.
You'd have the full name.
Like, this would have to suggest, I mean, well, and I think it just goes back again to what you just said. He doesn't like the name. So, like, you would almost have to believe that, like, Tom Riddle in school has requested of people to not refer to him as Tom,
like just by Riddle or something,
right? Which I'd be curious, because I mean, this is like one of the things that that Dumbledore will consistently use. Like, he'll never use Voldemort's chosen name of Voldemort when speaking to Voldemort,
right?
As like a very passive form of rebellion against him, basically. And we know that a much younger Dumbledore will talk to him, and I'm curious if he says, now I'm trying to look ahead, I'm sorry, so I'm reading as I'm talking. I'm trying to see whether or not this Dumbledore refers to him as Tom.
I think he does, and I want to say, I think Dippet calls him Tom as well, though, but he also refers to, maybe Dippet does just call him Riddle. He says, Riddle, come in, right? Is that what he says?
Yeah, let's see.
Now we're getting in here. Hold on. Now I'm looking ahead into the actual memory. Do-do-do-do-do.
No, he says, the thing is, Tom, he sighed, special arrangements might have been made for you. So that's Dippet talking to him, which Dippet seems more clueless to Tom Riddle's.
Right. I get the feeling that, okay, so here's my thought then, is that, like, because at this point, Tom Riddle is also just, like, incredibly charming and good.
Yes.
Like, at that stuff. So I think he probably doesn't like the name Tom, but he is smart enough to, like, never correct people about it, to just, like, let it happen and just be charming in the meantime.
That's a good point,
because, like, Slughorn calls him Tom, too.
You're right. Yeah, that's a very good point. So, I mean, and I actually think it's an interesting observation as well about, like, what is involved with being charming. Is it's, like, you're not in the business of correcting people.
Right,
because the very nature of correcting somebody is like the antithesis of charm.
Right.
You know, it's like you want everyone to leave every exchange with you feeling positive, not corrected.
Right.
So, yeah, no, that is kind of interesting. So, maybe it's like one of those things he has to hold on to, but then even then as he gets forward, it's like it probably is better to just like displaces his own identity as well. He's just able to sort of like, that Tom Riddle person, that was some other guy.
Yeah. So maybe he requested the T.M. Riddle spelling on the award.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost has to be.
Almost has to be.
Otherwise, this is more of a dead giveaway a little bit sooner. Although, again, at this point in time, as you're reading, you don't know who Tom Riddle is at all. So none of this means anything to you. So
you don't. And this is another part of the masterclass in keeping you in the dark, is that even though you will learn the full name Tom Marvolo Riddle, those three words will not be written next to each other at all. Like, you won't see the full name written out next to each other. Because when you see all the letters in a row, it might be a lot easier for you to immediately, like, parse out, like, all the letters of Voldemort are there.
Right.
But,
right.
They will not, all three words will not appear next to each other.
Interesting.
But you will learn all three names. So, like you have the full information, but you don't get to see it the way you need to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's so fun.
Yeah.
But the other thing I find to be kind of hilarious is just the fact that Ron has burped slugs all over the trophy,
yeah.
And so it's almost like he's needed to like attempt to wipe off all the filth. Yeah. it's like you got to keep scrubbing, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. Ron thinks he spent an hour cleaning that name. It's like it needs a lot more cleaning than that.
maybe even just throw it into a kiln.
Yeah.
You know, melt it down for parts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there we go.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, I've got to say, I love international travel. I don't know if there's anything that opens your eyes and mind more to different walks of life than immersing yourself inside of new ones. But one hesitation I always have about going somewhere new is how to best navigate the differing languages. But that's where Rosetta Stone can help. Because for me, it's not just about like the fear of getting lost, although to be fair, it's not a concern either. But to me, the immersion goes so much further than simply being somewhere else. I want to engage with and respect the locale by communicating in their tongue, not my own. And that's what's so great about Rosetta Stone. They provide 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, and more. And they use such an intuitive approach designed for you to pick up the language naturally, so you're really learning to speak, listen, and the one I always find the most fascinating, think in a new language. And what's even better is that when you sign up, it's for life. Yeah, a lifetime membership, because let's face it, we can only travel to so many new places, but so fast, but with all the time in the world, you can be ready for any adventures ahead. Don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Through the Gryffindor listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off your unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
Yeah. But then here's more. There's another good misdirect here where, because Harry reads the Vauxhall Road, which he recognizes as a muggle shop, and Harry immediately assumes he must have been muggle born, which is just like immediately makes you think like Tom Riddle's not a pure blood, not the heir of Slytherin.
You know what's interesting about that though is that like this is one of those where we're in this same scene, we'll have another instance where probably your three key red herrings, or I don't even know if red herrings, but like possible suspects, you're going to have Draco Malfoy, Ginny Weasley, and
Percy.
Yeah. All inside of the same scene.
Yeah.
And none of those would fit the Muggleborn description. So
that's true.
This particular detail doesn't actually contribute to any of the other. It's a misdirect in and of itself.
Right.
But it doesn't misdirect or guide you to make you think like, oh, maybe it is Percy, or like, oh, maybe it is Draco or something like that. Like it doesn't fit.
It doesn't, but it also doesn't let you, it stops you from thinking of Tom Riddle as a suspect.
True. That's a good point.
Right.
Because that would almost immediately eliminate that potential. So
yeah.
Okay, so that's funny. Let's see here. The other little like fun ism from this little exchange though is they're trying to decide like what to do. Ron sort of whispers 50 points if you can get it through Myrtle's nose.
Yeah.
And then it says the phrase, Harry, however, pocketed it.
Yep.
Pocketed it.
This is like a hard, yeah, go ahead.
This is just every book uses the phrase at some point in time, pocketed it. And it's because I think Jim Dale, when he was narrating the first book, Philosopher's Stone, mentioned that he had a really difficult time pronouncing this particular
phrase.
So then it was included.
For the sake of this. It's just like a little inside joke.
That's like an inside joke between the narrator of the book. Yeah. 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 So that's just like one of those things where I saw it and I was like, oh my God, there's the words.
That's hilarious.
even as I was saying it, pocketed it. It is kind of hard to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Harry, however, pocketed it.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. All right. So then Hermione finally gets out of the hospital wing a whole month later at the beginning of February. And even though Ron has not been interested in Riddle's diary, Hermione is. It's like, ooh, it must have hidden powers. She has the opposite of the eraser with the revealer.
Yeah, which is sort of like a funny just like yeah. like creation yep. is that like, you know, we all know that pink rubber eraser.
Yeah, right, this is one exactly.
That does the opposite, which is so hard to even imagine. So like, do you think that this would work in a way where it's like if you had to erase something and then use the revealer, it would like un-erase it?
Oh. I don't know. Like, yeah, could it reveal erased words or does it just reveal concealed words?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I don't know. That is a good question.
Yeah.
But of course, then Ron comes up with his absolute fire instincts again this chapter, where they're trying to figure out why someone was trying to, or why Riddle got a special service to the school. And Ron says, maybe he murdered Myrtle. That would have done everyone a favor. And it's like, that's exactly what, it's like, well, that's not what he got the award for, but it is what he did.
Yeah, Ron is just totally
Ron
on top
crushing
of
it, man.
Everything. Yeah. Right before that, he also does make reference to 30 OWLs is maybe what the special services of the school was. That was just also something I highlighted because it's not possible.
Not possible. You can only get 12 because that's the number of classes that they teach. And Percy does get all 12. And if you recall, Hermione's taking all 12 classes in the next book. And the only way she's able to do that is with the time turner. So ifso facto, Percy had time turner.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not, I mean, it's not crazy to think about. Like if they gave Hermione one, it's like, it's not unusual to think that like she's not the first person they've ever made.
Right. It sounds like, like when we have really exceptional students, like sometimes we make this accommodation.
Right, yeah, there's something you got to do.
Yeah,
I do maybe you murdered Myrtle. Wow, I cannot
murdered Myrtle.
Pocketed it. Oh my gosh, I asked for that one. That's so funny. Yeah, I can't believe that I didn't even highlight that.
Oh, I can't believe you did either.
I know. I was like, what do you got next? Oh, that one.
Yeah, that one.
That did happen.
Yeah, where Ron guesses exactly what Tom Riddle did.
Yep.
I thought this is one of those things that when Hermione starts trying to get the revealed text in the diary, and she uses a spell that I think this is one of those like trivia spells. It says like Aparecium, I guess, which kind of sounds like a peer-ism. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like if this one made me laugh because if you've played Hogwarts Legacy at all, you will know that about every 10 steps you take, you're going to want to cast the spell Revelio just to see if maybe this room has something hiding in it.
Revelio.
Yeah. So let me tell you what, if you've only played like 30 minutes of Hogwarts Legacy, you've heard your characters yell out Revelio about a million times already. So the fact that there are any other revealing spells at all that you could ever use is garbage to me. You didn't even try Revelio, Hermione. Yeah,
come on, Hermione.
Jeez. Anyway, that's all I wanted to bring up there.
There you go.
Yeah. The it's like got its own button on the game. It's like, yeah, all the other spells you get like hotkey over here and you can change it around. It's like, no, you'll always need this one.
This is just
square.
Yeah. You're always on the lookout.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Let's see. Maybe we're going to go to the diary for Christmas and just couldn't be bothered filling it in. Okay, so this is the thing. This is the only thing I thought Ron is like, his only miss is that Ron is saying, I'm telling you, there's nothing to find in the diary. He's like, oh yeah. At first he thought it was a dangerous book and now he's convinced there's nothing in it. But it's like, at the same rate, it's like, he got a diary for Christmas and couldn't be bothered filling it in. But it's like, but then why was someone trying to get rid of it, Ron? Why? Come on, man.
Yeah. So he's been onto it, and then he sort of trips right there at the finish line.
But here, I think, is the sentence maybe you were talking about earlier that indicates how the Horcruxes were perhaps already conceived from the very beginning.
I was going to say, so the line is, and while Harry was sure he had never heard the name T.M. Riddle before, it still seemed to mean something to him, almost as though Riddle was a friend he had when he was very small and half forgotten. But this was absurd. He never had friends before Hogwarts. Dudley had made sure of that.
Just make sure we throw Dudley under the bus here, randomly in chapter 13. Yeah,
it's
not under the bus, I mean.
Yeah, the trolley. Yeah. We haven't thought about Dudley for one hot second, so yeah, his inclusion there is kind of like, all right, yeah, why not? But yeah, no, this is the line that I was talking about, where I underlined it. I said weird Horcrux power, and then I also said good continuity as my notes there, because it does seem like this is like something about the Horcrux inside of Harry seems to be resonating with the Horcrux inside of the diary.
Right.
Like, is that what your interpretation?
Not even that it has to be the Horcrux inside of Harry, just that it's like there's a Horcrux in there. And it's like affecting Harry. Because the other, actually, that wasn't even the sentence. I do agree. That's also the other one was Harry couldn't explain even to himself why he didn't just throw Riddle's diary away.
Okay.
It's like he can't explain it. I don't know. Why won't you get rid of it? I don't know. I can't. I got this book. I can't explain it. I want it. You know, it's like the can't explain it is the Horcrux part.
Yes.
The diary doesn't want to be thrown away or something, you know?
Maybe that's what's going on there. That's a good point as well. Yeah. Where it's like the diary is sort of like, no. I know who's got me right now. Like, you know, this is.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This is who I want. This is what I was looking for.
That's the other thing. It's like, okay, that's a good point. Cause it's almost like, boy, it's so convenient. Harry picked up the diary. And it's like, is it convenient?
Yeah.
Or does the diary, I mean, the diary is alive.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is that like, we know that, like that Voldemort is performing, I think, extremely rudimentary magic when he's in his non-physical form in the Forest of Albania. Like that's how he's like occupying rats and snakes and stuff. I don't think enough to like cast real and proper spells, but it's almost like just even the essence of him is able to do something.
Yeah.
Have like some magical impact. So anyway, yeah, that line in particular, it's not something that ever would like super stand out. Like, you know, it's not like if you're having a conversation about the books, you're like, no, but there's that one scene where like Harry can't throw away the diary. It's like, that's probably something. It's like, you know, it almost seems more like plot convenience. Like when you're reading it, it's just sort of like, why would anybody care about the diary? Like, it doesn't matter. And it's like, no. There's a reason why.
Yeah, there's a reason why.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. So, yeah, that I think is the first little hints that the diary is, or the idea that the full concept of the Horcrux has, like, already started to be fleshed out.
Yes.
I think it probably gets refined a lot, but I think it is already being thought of as a Horcrux.
Yep.
Anyway, let's see. They do go find the shield up in the trophy room, and it says it didn't carry details of why it had been given to him, which when I first read that sentence, I was like, that's really surprising given that what it was given to him for was catching a murderer.
I know. Yeah. I wonder if the optics of this situation look so bad because it's like a fellow student had like brought something into the school. So it's like, you don't want to like necessarily be like throwing shade at that.
Yeah, I mean, it does get explained later on in the chapter, I think, why there's no explanation on it.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, when I read that, I was like, that's so weird given what he did. But it turns out it's not that weird. It is. I do think it's weird that his burnished gold shield was tucked away in a corner cabinet, because it's like, again, like, even if it doesn't say what he did is apparently very impressive. And if it's tucked away in a corner cabinet, like, how did Ron even puke on it, you know?
That's like one of those where it's like, is this just sort of like his job was to polish every single thing in this room, and this was in the room, and so he polished it in the cabinet. And now, you know, in that moment, Ron's probably like, this one's not even on display. Like,
I know. But I do like this idea, though. The fact that it's tucked away to me means that like Dumbledore went to the trophy room and is like, move in this.
Yes, you know, 100%. Yeah, like, because I think, as we will eventually learn, I don't think Dippet like had figured out that anything was askew with Tom.
Not one iota.
Yeah. So I think that's like one of those things where Dumbledore was probably like, come on, man. Like, how are you not seeing this?
Right.
You know, so then like when he takes over, it's like, no, we are not displaying this one.
Yeah. We're not giving Tom Riddle stuff on display, but he has more than one thing on display. It says an old medal for magical merit, and it was on a list of old head boys, which you would assume if they have lists of old head boys, there should probably be like a list with Harry's and his mom. Both his parents should be on a list like that somewhere up there, right?
You would definitely think so. The only thing I can think about here is like going back to like high school or middle school, where they would have like, you know, in the gymnasium, they were often, you know, like placards that would list like all the state championships teams. So it might say like, you know, volleyball 1992,
yeah,
you know, like whatever. And then like, you know, 1997 and, you know, like, and then so on and so forth. And then sometimes for like track athletes, it would have like names in particular. So it'd be like 1 mile state champion, you know, like so-and-so back in 1987. So all I could think is that maybe like if you're looking at the list from 1942, maybe your eyes don't scroll down.
Oh yeah. Not that I think it should have like mentioned. I just think it's like they must be there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So here he's very close to his parents' name.
Right. Yeah.
At this moment, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And then there's a little Percy red herring shade here where Ron is like prefect head boy, probably top of every class. Sounds like Percy.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And it's like, yep. Yep. Okay. We're trying to compare Tom Riddle to Percy here.
Right. Right. Yep. But then you also get a little line from Hermione, which also could be like one of those like tiny little nods as like maybe their relationship, which is just to say, you say that like it's a bad thing, said Hermione, a slightly hurt voice. Like that's like one of those things where, I mean, I think you could just as easily interpret it in a completely non-romantic sense and just assume that it's because Hermione intends to be that.
Yeah.
You know, like that's an aspiration of hers. And she's like, well, like, you know, is that a bad thing? Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but it also could be the case that she's sort of like, wait, would you not like that?
Yeah. Right. Like what?
Oh man.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to impress you over here, man.
Right. Yeah. Is it not working? My straight A's?
Yeah.
Straight O's.
Yep. There's this more misdirection up here. It says that there had been no more attacks since those on Justin and nearly headless Nick and Madame Pomfrey. Yeah. Which like that you, it says it's interesting that like it, the text just goes ahead and tells you there has been no more attacks since this point. But like, because it phrases it as since those on nearly headless Nick, like it said, there'd be no more. If it had read, there's no more attacks since Harry found the diary, which is also true. Like you'd start to realize how connected the diary is to the attacks.
You're right.
But it's like, it's phrased in this way that you don't realize like, oh yeah, there hasn't been any attacks since the diary was gotten rid of by whoever.
You're 100% correct.
Like, oh, that's such good. Yeah. It's like,
It's like there can't be more attacks because Ginny has successfully finally overridden her, like,
right,
her connection to the diary.
Right.
So of course there are no more attacks. But then, you know, the good news is, as we carry this thought forward, the Mandrakes are becoming moody and secretive, meaning they were fast leaving childhood. And then I think the next line here says, the moment their acne clears up, they'll be ready for repotting again. This is like one of those things like where the humanization of the Mandrakes is rather significant going into the next line, which is, and after that, it won't be long until we're cutting them up and stewing them. You'll have Mrs. Norris back in no time. It's like, it's so hard not to feel like they're going through puberty. Like,
right.
You know, like they're being, I mean, they're being moody and secretive, which, you know, are hilariously is also probably characteristics right now of Ginny in particular.
Right.
You know, where it's just sort of like common teenager stuff.
Right.
We all go through it, you know. But yeah, so I that was like the one thing I was like, man, it's hard to imagine something that's like that's moody and secretive and going through acne and all that, and then we're gonna cut them up to save other people.
Right.
It just seems like small little humans.
Right. It is like a funny little, just like, no, but they are just plants. So
they are just plants. It's fine. Whatever. Don't worry about them.
Yep. Moving on, the rest of the school seems to notice that there hasn't been any attacks, and of course Gilderoy Lockhart is taking all the credit he can. He tells McGonagall, like, I don't think there'll be any more trouble, Minerva. I think the chamber's been locked for good this time. The culprit must have known it was only a matter of time before I caught them. Rather sensible to stop now before I came down hard on them, which I was just like, yeah, nice of you to let him begin in the first four attacks, though. Like, yeah. You know, good for you.
He's just so...
I know.
It really is. I mean, I said it, I think, in a couple weeks ago, but I feel the same way. It's like I love Lockhart as an entity, like, from afar, but when I'm reading his actual words, I just hate him.
To
the core of my being.
Right, yes.
It's like, but in a very different way than I hate, like, you know, like Marge, like I was saying earlier as well.
Right.
Where it's just like, you know, he's just so insufferable. It's
right.
Like, how could anyone be this arrogant?
Right. Yeah. It's just like, at some point it's like he knows he's a fraud. And he's like, he knows you know he's a fraud. And because Like I know you know I know you're a fraud, but he's like, if I quadruple down on that, if that's the understanding that you know I'm a fraud, and I know you know, but I do it anyway, then maybe I'm not. I cause you to doubt yourself.
Twisted logic.
Exactly.
Twisted logic. It's just going on so far. It's way over the top.
They know we know.
Right. I know. It's like he's way too smart to be this successful at pulling something off and so dumb to make himself so in the line of fire all the time and always.
Yeah.
It's just like, how could this be?
That's the thing. It's like, that's almost it. He's like, they can't like, I'll just be so outlandish, they'll have to believe me.
Right.
Because no one could be that stupid. Like, I'll be so stupid, they'll have to believe me because someone couldn't be that stupid. Right. So I must be telling the truth.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so as a reward or a celebration to himself or whatever to celebrate the monster being gone, he decides to throw a Valentine's Day celebration and he decorates the Great Hall. We talked about that a little bit earlier. By the time it's breakfast, a good 46 people have sent him Valentine cards, which this is like, so question, is he lying that 46 people or do 46 people in the school actually like, Are they like under the like in the Hermione camp of like, oh my god, he's so cool?
I have to imagine he's selling a few people.
Yeah.
Because out there in the real world, I mean, it's like the whole staff seems to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this guy's just full of it.
Right.
You know, like that exchange with McGonagall, like I even wrote a note. I was like, what did McGonagall say under her breath after he walked away? And I also just added, I love sassy McGonagall. Because there is like some of the scenes like where McGonagall stands up to Umbridge and they are some of the most glorious moments ever. But like that's the thing about Lockhart is that like anybody who knows anything, he's not fooling them. But like anybody who doesn't know anything, he might still have the opportunity to fool them. So, and he is fooling Hermione successfully. And I can only imagine, like, you know, even I can just sort of think back to like Lavender Brown or is it Parvati?
Oh, Parvati, yeah.
You know, they're both kind of taken with like Trelawney.
That's true.
Next year. So like I could maybe see a world. And
I guess there's also a world where like you, the students, like even if you suspect he's a bit like daft, like if you, he almost has like the shield of like, well, Dumbledore hired me.
Yes.
You know, it's like, we all know Dumbledore's right. And he hired Lockhart. So I guess he must be telling the truth.
Well, and it's even tough when you're that age to have the awareness to question an adult.
That's true.
Ever, you know, because like when you're a kid, you think, I mean, you just assume the adults in your life have it all figured out that they know what they're talking about.
Right.
And upon becoming an adult, what you quickly realize is that we're all just figuring it out.
Right.
You know, so it's like, even if we have a reasonably firm understanding of what we're doing, for the most part, we're all still floundering.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's that. So yeah, I have no idea. 46 seems reasonable to me. How many people are at school total? I always do this math.
Like 200 or something.
Yeah, maybe 200. So he's got about, you know, a quarter of the populace.
Who
kind of bought in.
Yeah. All right. So there's that. So next up, Harry gets tackled by the dwarf guy and is about to get a Valentine for himself. And I think there is a little hint here where it says hot all over at the thought of being given a Valentine in front of a line of first years, which happened to include Ginny Weasley. Harry tried to escape. And it's like, is it the fact that Ginny's there that's making this embarrassing for you, Harry?
See, this chapter's all over it.
It's all over it. Yeah.
It's like, wait a second. Does that mean that Harry has sort of like noticed Ginny a little bit? Like, I mean, is that like,
right. It's like, it would be embarrassing no matter what, but like, especially if Ginny's there.
I know. Yeah. That being said though, I don't even know that it ever explicitly says inside of the book that Ginny is the one who sends him this particular.
You are correct. It does not confirm that Ginny is the one who has sent it, but it has been confirmed out of universe that it is Ginny.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, so one of the things that I find to be kind of interesting is that as many people as happen to show up on this particular situation, which once again, I stand by the belief that Harry might be cursed in some capacity with bad luck, because as all this is happening, like Draco Malfoy shows up, Percy Weasley shows up.
Draco always shows up.
Ginny's there.
Embarrassing thing. Potter.
Potter.
Hold on. I'm coming. Hold my bag. Crab. I'm on my way, Harry.
It's like I sort of love a world where Draco is like crashing through the hallways. It's like, no, I can't miss it.
I took my hair raising potion.
Yeah.
My hair got my spider sense.
But you want to know what's funny is for all the people who are present, there are two characters who aren't present, and that would be Fred and George Weasley.
That's
who
true.
Just one page later are... Harry is going to bed before anyone else in his dormitory because Fred and George were singing the phrase, "His eyes are as green as a fresh pickled toad."
Right.
And so this is like one of those situations where it's like, it's never actually said that it's Ginny who sends it.
You think it's Fred and George?
And you know who are two major pranksters.
Dude, I would love that too.
Yeah, right?
I love
like,
that too.
Would it not make sense? I mean, this feels like Fred and George's handiwork.
It kind of does. I also it does because I also cannot imagine Ginny doing this.
I know. It's like the more you get to know Ginny, it doesn't fit anything about the way that she is or any of like her swagger or confidence or overall.
I know.
Like by the time Ginny is a fifth year, she is arguably the most popular girl in school.
Yeah,
like,
I think so.
She is extremely cool.
And this is like, I mean, for a girl who can barely talk to him to send a singing Valentine that like loudly announces, "I wish he was mine," you know,
yeah, right.
In front of, which then happens in front of her and presume all of her classmates.
Right.
It's like, boy, that is some boldness.
Right. Yeah. And the real instance here is that if you're looking at it from Ginny's perspective, she's like, oh crap. If she's in fact the one who sent it. The other thing that kind of stood out to me about this particular poem is the phrase, "the hero who conquered the Dark Lord."
Yeah. Which, the fact that the phrase "the Dark Lord" in here, I circled that and was like, this line is the theory fodder. Line.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, I mean, I just said Fred and George, but like the one that might make sense here is we know that Ginny has been communicating quite a bit with Tom Riddle.
Yeah.
And so like the only people who ever refer to Voldemort as the Dark Lord are not usually his adversaries, but rather his...
Just the Death Eaters.
It's just the Death Eaters, yeah. So it's kind of rare for anybody else to refer to him that way. So if Ginny has been so occupied by the essence of Voldemort, Tom Riddle himself, then maybe that might inform
like
her.
She's been exposed to the phrase "the Dark Lord" a bunch.
Yeah.
As a way to name Voldemort. The other possible suspect, or which could explain why Draco was there, is Draco. Because his dad would have been a Death Eater.
That's also true.
He would, of course, love to embarrass Harry. And he shows up. So I love the idea that Draco sends Harry a Valentine.
Okay, now I'm loving the headcanon of Draco pacing in the dungeons, holding a diary of his own, trying to be like, "Hey, can I really rhyme pickled toad with Dark Lord?"
You know, yeah.
or whatever, or backboard, blackboard. It's like, it's a bit of a slant rhyme, isn't it?
Yeah.
It'll work. That's the real reason that he comes bustling in out of nowhere.
Okay, let us know in the comments whether, I mean, despite, I think it's confirmed that it was Ginny, but let us know, do you think it was Ginny, Fred and George, or Draco sends Harry the Valentine?
Yeah. And I think it's like disregard any information we might know out of universe.
Right.
Focus only on what's happening in page.
What
right
is
now.
The best version of it?
Because
you know?
Because really, let's face it. Draco shows up in a hurry. I think we can all tell that he's a little bit out of breath. It says, "What's going on here?" But I think it's more like, "What's going on here, guys?
What's going on? You got a Valentine? Who said that? Not me."
Wow, this is so funny. Anyway, people will be crying with mirth, which I also underlined because I was like, just the idea. This whole scene is mortifying.
It is so bad. If this happened to you, you'd be like, "I'm dead.
I'm dead.
Send me home." This is it. Yeah, look, we've been talking. I told you we were going to be long. We've been talking for 57 minutes now, and we haven't gotten into the diary yet.
Well, you know, we're doing our best here.
We're getting there. It's okay. We're just going to power forward.
We're going to power forward. Yeah.
Yep. Let's see. So then this is another good misdirect here because Harry falls over, rips the bag, and Draco picks up the diary. God, that would be even worse. But then it says, "Ginny was staring from the diary to Harry, looking terrified," which once you know that it's Ginny, you're like, oh, she's looking at it. And she's like, "Oh my God, no, please don't figure it out."
Right.
Like, not Harry of all people.
Right.
But from your perspective, it's just like, you know, it's like, you know, Ginny has a crush on Harry, and like what you're reading is like, oh no, oh, Draco has Harry's diary? No, that's so embarrassing. Like, that's such bad news.
Right.
And it's like, that's not what's happening. It's like all really being spelled out for you now.
I know, but do you also not feel like this scene kind of diffuses any suspicion of Draco altogether? Which, I mean, we've kind of already learned that it's not Draco anyway, but like, you know, like, Draco doesn't know what this diary is.
Right.
So like, you know, he's not being like, wait a second, you know, like it would be kind of crazy if it was like, Draco looked from the diary to Harry and a look of confusion fell across his face. You know, it'd be like,
no, I think it's just that the idea that like Ginny is able to recognize that Harry's worst enemy has just picked up what she perceives as his personal diary.
Yes, right, like, right. Yes.
Which would also be bad news.
It would be. Yeah. But so is this our first use of Expelliarmus?
It is. So, I think so. This is it. Yeah.
Okay. So that means that Harry's first ever and last on-page use of Expelliarmus are both on Tom Riddle.
Oh, wait. No, because he...
Well, it's...
Interesting. Well, because he cast it at Draco.
I guess he cast it at Draco.
Yeah.
But it's over the diary, which is Tom Riddle. He uses Expelliarmus in the final duel.
That is interesting. You're right. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Okay. Yeah. So this is his first use of Expelliarmus, which I guess is at Draco and Tom Riddle.
Yes.
I'll take it. And eventually he does. Interestingly, he will later manually disarm Draco, which is what allows his final Expelliarmus to kill Voldemort.
Also true.
Yeah.
Also true. Yeah. So it's a 1-2 punch.
It is.
Yeah, a little homage.
So there's that. I guess he doesn't knock Draco's wand out of his hand here. That'd be interesting if Harry becomes master of Draco's wand in this moment, but obviously not. Does Snape become master of Lockhart's wand in the dueling club?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The wand was like, he beat you.
He got you, man.
You lost.
You lost. Not that you've cast a spell with me in like years, but...
Right, yeah. But no chance. But no chance. He's clearly more powerful.
Snape is the master of Lockhart's wand. Fact. There we go.
Yep. There we go. okay. So let's scoot forward a little bit. We'll try to find our way inside of the diary. The one thing I want to touch on just barely at all is the fact that the ink that does... pour all over all of Harry's books is scarlet ink, which is this. I mean, to me, this could be a trivia question. Like, it would be like, what is the color of Harry's ink that spills all over his books? Because
Harry's writing in red ink.
Yes, exactly.
What?
Why is he writing
in
red ink? Kind of creepy.
It's, dude, writing there. This is like a legitimate like psychological like thing where like when like teachers should like. If they write in red ink, it's like more stress inducing. Like if they grade in red ink versus like green ink or something.
For the teacher or for the student?
If they mark up the paper in red ink,
they're more likely to be a harsh.
No, like when the student gets the paper back, it is more likely to give them a much more negative.
Yeah, 100%.
Like if you got, like even if you made a ton of mistakes, if it's marked up in green ink, it doesn't feel nearly as bad as if it's in red ink.
Right.
But writing in red ink, that's just hard. Like if everything is in red, that's hard to read.
I know. Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's
bad graphic design, Harry.
Well, yeah. Right. But like also we're inside of a school year where there is like blood written walls.
I know. Right? You know, like, what are you doing?
It's like, just go and choose a different color, any color other than red. It's like, you're making me so Harry. I got to say, you must be narrating the story because you're leaving out some important details mm-hmm. why people might suspect you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it looks like you're writing in blood. So anyway, Harry finally pulls out his quill and starts writing inside of the diary and says, "My name is Harry Potter," to which the diary itself responds, "Hello, Harry Potter. My name is Tom Riddle.
Woo-hoo.
How did you come by my diary?" To which I got chills when I read it. I was like, it's happening.
He's talking to Voldemort.
Here we are. We are inside of it. And I love that Harry's response is, "Someone tried to flush it down a toilet." To which Tom Riddle's reply must have been like, "What the?"
But he's so charming.
He's so charming. He's all over it.
Lucky I recorded my memories in some more lasting ways than ink.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's quite good. He's good. I do like... What's interesting is that you can almost compare Harry's interactions with the diary to his interactions with the Half-Blood Prince, which doesn't write back to him, but it has so much writing on it anyway.
Yeah.
And it's like... he almost starts seeing Tom as a friend in the same way he starts seeing the Half-Blood Prince as a friend. But, like, obviously, Tom, he, like, uncovers much faster, and he's clearly Voldemort and the bad guy, but then Snape is not that.
Well, but. Yeah, no, the other thing I find to be kind of interesting here, though, is like, maybe even on some level, Lockhart is meant to serve in contrast to Tom Riddle, because Tom Riddle is about to tell a falsehood about his own endeavors in a way that comes across so much more reasonable.
Yeah.
But like, I think this is, like, where, like, Tom Riddle's charm is effective, where Gilderoy Lockhart, you just see it and you're like, well, that's total BS. Like, it's just
right.
Like, but, like, you know, so he's going through.
You're right. That is a very good call, where it's just like, why is Tom Riddle so believable while Lockhart is not?
I don't know, because, like, I think you could possibly even read it in a different tone of voice and get, like, Lockhart's essence from his recapping of the Chamber of Secrets. Like, of course I know of the Chamber of Secrets. In my day, they told us it was a lesson, that it did not exist. But this was a lie. Yeah. You know, like,
my fifth year, the chamber was open and the monster attacked. Yeah.
Yeah.
I caught the person who opened the chamber and he was expelled.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yeah, yep. Exactly. Like, I mean, it's like, it's not terribly dissimilar from, like, what we've been hearing from Lockhart.
You're right.
But he's also lying.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. So anyway, because he's basically telling Harry straight up, like, you know, they gave me a shiny trophy for my trouble, but warned me to keep my mouth shut. But, like, in reality, he's like, he has manipulated this whole situation so well that, like, he has been able to blame somebody and maintain the knowledge that the monster is safe, but is delivering it in such a way that makes it seem like, no, the authorities told me to cover it up.
Yeah.
But he's the one who covered it up.
Right. Like, he's the one who covers it up and then gets the authorities to ask him to cover it up, which is, like, great for him because none of it's true.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right,
but then, like, yeah, there's this line. This is the line I didn't realize was in here, was, Professor Dippet, ashamed that such a thing had happened at Hogwarts, forbade me to tell the truth. A story was given out that the girl had died in a freak accident. So it's like, no one even realized the chamber was open last time. Like, most people don't realize Myrtle, like, was killed by the Chamber of Secrets. They think she was killed by something else, which
by
is like
else, yeah.
Yeah, which is like, that sucks for Myrtle.
I know, and maybe this is, like, why my like misremembering is so bad with this particular, like, segment of the story, because a lot of times I'm like, why would anybody think that Slytherin's monster was Aragog? Like, you know, it's like, it's a giant spider that has nothing to do with Slytherin. Like, that seems like such a weird choice, but it's like, because nobody ever thought it was the Chamber of Secrets.
Right.
You know, they're like, the writing wasn't on the wall like it was this go round.
Right.
But then moving on from that, the other thing I think is wild is that Tom Riddle's diary has got some serious magic packed into it, because I'm pretty sure the Pensieve that is in the headmaster's office was found at the location of Hogwarts.
Yeah, I believe the way the story goes, and you might have to fact check this, is that Rowena Ravenclaw has a dream about a hog on a mountain, and then they go to that mountain and dig where the hog was and find the Pensieve, and that's where they build the castle.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. We, of course, all know that what actually happened was they attacked a giant
dragon. Yes.
At the scene.
Hogwarts is a dragon.com.
Yeah. and transfigured it into a castle. And that's the reason that, like, the staircases move. It's just like the organs of the dragon, you know, just continuing to.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But he's basically, like, that he's contained all of his memories in the diary means he's, like, sort of made his own Pensieve in a way.
I mean, in the way that Harry interacts inside of the diary is not at all different from his interactions inside of the Pensieve.
I mean, he, like, describes it when he's in the Pensieve. He says he compares it to this exact experience.
So there you go. Yeah. So it's like whatever magic Tom Riddle was able to inject into this device, it's pretty impactful. It's pretty big.
Yeah. But I think so. The fact that they cover it all up is then the explanation for why it doesn't say what T.M. Riddle did on his trophy for special services to the school.
Yes.
Because that's part of the cover up.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. There you go. So then Harry basically is able to fall inside of the story. His feet hit solid ground and he stood shaking as the blurred shape around him suddenly came into focus. That's sort of like the description of, like, what happens when you fall inside of the Pensieve. And then we kind of see a scene where I think Harry is really basically supposed to see himself as Tom Riddle.
Yeah. You know, so much. Yeah.
You've got this, like, jet black hair kid. I mean, he's taller than Harry, but he's also older than Harry. But he's like, you know, he's interacting with the headmaster of the day. And it seems like they're also trying to like figure out what's going on. We learned that Tom Riddle, like Harry, is also an orphan, and like that he basically finds himself feeling most at home while he's at school, and he's requesting the ability to stay for the summer holidays.
Right. He's a half-blood just like Harry.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And interestingly, there's no mention in here that he's in Slytherin.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Which that is really fascinating.
Yeah.
But basically I think, you know, pretty much what happens is like, you know, I think at this point in time, Tom Riddle is just sort of like, yeah, I'm just going to keep using the chamber to attack people because like, why not? Like I can do it. Like I'm Slytherin's heir. Like,
right. As far as he's concerned, it's his job to purge the school of the Muggleborns.
Exactly. But then like the only reason why he's backtracking on it at all and even frames Hagrid at all is because Dippet's basically saying like, well, if we don't find out what's going on, we're going to have to shut down the school.
I know. There's this line here. It says Riddle was doing some serious thinking, and it's like biting his lip, his forehead furrowed. It's like this is like him just being like, like he's having this real like Hogwarts is my home dilemma.
Yes,
like himself, which is like really, really interesting.
Yes,
that like because like he is as far as he's concerned, he's like living up to his destiny here. But like he's like trying to weigh in this moment whether that's worth closing Hogwarts, and he ultimately decides it's not.
I know. Yeah. I mean, and like, this is the thing. We always make the joke about like how Voldemort couldn't even conquer a high school.
Right.
But it's like to him, Hogwarts is not a high school.
Right.
Like, his love for that place is actually like in his own extremely twisted way about as genuine as I think he can love anything.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I think you're right. But so a page before that, though, we mentioned this earlier. You finally learn the middle name is Marvolo. He says, Tom after my father, Marvolo after my grandfather.
There you go.
There's Tom, 1, 2, 3 different words and a different line. That's probably not intentional or anything between that and the word Marvolo. And it's the only time you'll hear the word Marvolo for like several more books. Well, until the end of the chamber.
Yeah.
But you don't see the words Tom, Marvolo, Riddle written next to each other. Riddle isn't even written like near those two words as it here. So it's like it's very intentionally making sure you don't see all the letters right next to each other so that it is very not obvious. Because if you put the D in, like the V-O-L in Marvolo is maybe the closest you could get to being like, that sort of looks like Voldemort. But like there's no, if the Riddle was there too, you might be able to connect the D to the Vald, right? Like a little bit. You'd have 4 letters then.
Yes. Yeah.
You could maybe get like Voldemort out of it, but
you're right. You're right. Especially because like the name Marvolo is so unusual.
It is. It's so like weird. Marvolo.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. That doesn't really track with anything. It's like that could stand out like a sore thumb to anybody who is attempting to uncover whatever this book's twist could be.
Yeah.
The other fun thing about that, I think we just made a video about, is all of the different language translations had to get like a little bit clever with what the various names were so that the anagram can still work. So I think it's in French. His middle name is like Elvis, which I always find to be kind of hilarious.
Tom Elvis Riddle.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Yep.
But so anyway, obviously Tom Riddle's reaction to the threat of the school being closed is like, okay, now I need to figure out a way to basically prevent that from happening. And he almost immediately seems to have an ace up his sleeve. It seems like this whole thing happens the same night. He leaves Dippet's office. He encounters the auburn-haired Dumbledore in the hallway, which I have to include because that was a question we had on the Jay versus Ben ones, and I did not realize that Dumbledore was once a redhead, and that was just sort of like one of those things that always stuck out to me.
Right. That's part of like the Rumbledore theory.
But yes, yeah.
Which is the worst one, so I'm not even going to talk about it. But there is this line there where it says, "Well, hurry off to bed," said Dumbledore, giving Riddle exactly the kind of penetrating stare Harry knew so well, which is just like, that to me is Dumbledore actively reading his mind.
Yes,
like,
I agree.
Right there. He is just like, voom, I got it. So like earlier when he's like, it's not a matter of who, it's how. It's like, yeah, Dumbledore knows it's him.
Yes.
He just can't do anything about it.
Right. Yep, yeah. Exactly. I highlighted the exact same sentence because it was just like, yep, at that point in time, Dumbledore knows what's going on.
Because he's already met him as an orphan. You know, like he's been on to this kid since like minute one.
Yes. Yep. Dumbledore has always sort of suspected that there was something different about Tom, and he was the only one who wasn't like lulled in by his charm and everything. So anyway, then as we trudge forward, like we know that Tom basically goes right down to the dungeons beneath the school where he's encountering Hagrid, who is attempting to coax Aragog. This is, I always want to say Aragorn.
I know.
Aragog into a box. And this is like one of those moments as well where like when you're a young kid reading this chapter and you know Hagrid the way you know Hagrid.
Yeah.
And it's like, no.
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 Not Hagrid. But yeah, he, it seems like, it, I mean, this. I mean, it's pretty conniving of Tom Riddle. Like he clearly has something like sorted. Like he knows who he's supposed to go and frame essentially right away, which honestly Dippet, it seems like should have probably been like just maybe a teensy bit more like suspicious of like, hey, we're going to have to close the school unless we can figure this out. Solved it.
Yeah. Like, hey, what do you know? Like an hour later.
Right. The person I told that we might have to close the school happened to be the one who also
happened to catch it. And he even asks him, he's like, do you know something about it? He's like, no. Why?
No.
Huh? No. Why? Hold on, give me an hour.
Yeah. Give me like 40.
Yeah.
Tops.
Yeah. I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
What is crazy, though, and this is something I don't like, maybe didn't 1,000% put together, but upon the reread here. So, yeah, they go down, they corner Hagrid, and let me find the exact line here. It says, let's see, and out it came, something that made Harry let out a long, piercing scream unheard by anyone. A vast, low-slung, hairy body and a tangle of black legs, a gleam of many eyes and a pair of razor-sharp pincers. Riddle raised his wand again, but he was too late. The thing bowled him over as it scuttled away, tearing up the corridor and out of sight. Riddle scrambled to his feet, looking after it. He raised his wand, but the huge boy leapt on him, seized his wand, and threw him back down, yelling no. Okay, so all in all, he corners him. He blasts Hagrid back. Aragog gets out, bowls Riddle over, and before Tom can go like chase down Aragog. Before he can go chase down the spider, Hagrid jumps on him and just starts wailing on him. Which, yeah. Ouch! You know that hurt.
Yes,
but the point is that Aragog gets away in this scene. Right? And yet, Hagrid is expelled, which means Tom has no proof at all that it was Hagrid.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's really just
his word. It's just his word against Hagrid's. And Tom is so respected and so charismatic that he gets Hagrid expelled and his wand broken. Like, he does not have the monster in hand.
No, he doesn't.
All he has is, I saw Hagrid with a giant spider, and that's enough. That is enough. That is so terrible.
It is very frustrating. You know? Yeah, because that's the thing, is that we know Aragog makes it out of the castle, into the forest,
right.
You know, finds a home, does all the rest, has a family. Yeah, that's frustrating. But it's also the type of thing like where I feel like Hagrid is so kind, you know, and like, Hagrid would know he was guilty of housing an animal he wasn't supposed to have. But like, there's a piece of me that's like, I wonder if Hagrid just had any defense at all. It's just like, I had a spider.
Right. You
know? Like...
Right. It's like, but I think it speaks probably greater to like the greater like prejudices in the wizarding world.
It definitely does.
That like they all don't like Hagrid because they can tell something's wrong with him.
Yeah.
There's something wrong.
Yeah.
They can tell something's different about him. They don't know what it is, but they don't like it.
Exactly.
They suspect what it is and they really don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But obviously, if you know Hagrid, there's nothing wrong with him at all.
Yeah. Yes. No, of course. Of course. Yeah. So anyway, but this, I mean, that basically rounds us off to the end of the chapter. Harry like wakes up in his bed. He's sweating and shaking. Ron looks over to him and he says, "What's up?" And Harry ends the chapter with the sentence, "It was Hagrid, Ron. Hagrid opened the Chamber of Secrets 50 years ago." So imagine little young us sitting on the end of our bed, listening to our dad read us this story and knowing it's going to be a week before we get any more information.
I know.
Oh my gosh. It's like, it's impossible to get back into that mindset because it's just like, I can't. It's like, that meant that little me had to spend a whole week thinking Hagrid was guilty.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You're like, and it seems pretty, I mean, that's the thing, is that like Tom Riddle sells you the reader.
I know.
I know.
And Harry.
And Harry.
the worst. Anyway, but that closes out chapter 13.
Fitting
number for the chapter, being as dark truly. As it is. But looking forward ahead to chapter 14, Cornelius Fudge.
Cornelius Fudge!
Yeah, he's also
the minister. He's also the worst.
Yeah. Gosh. Made a whole video about him once upon a time.
There's so much like corruption in the wizarding world.
There is.
All the time. Yeah, it's everywhere. Rampant racism, slavery. Oh, it's bad. It's bad.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah. Jay, before we close out for the day, do you have a review for us?
I sure do, Ben. It comes from Shiny Psychic 190.
Great name.
Fantastic. I love Harry Potter and the podcast is the best deep breakdown any Potterhead could possibly love. I always look forward to when the next episode comes out. And this is my favorite podcast right now. But I knew right away when this was announced, it was the podcast for me. Question. In Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry said that he would probably go mad if he sees himself bursting into Hagrid's cabin. I've always wondered, is this true? Could Harry have burst in and explained everything? And furthermore, what if somebody used Polyjuice to look like you and then burst into the room? I'd love to hear you guys' opinions on this.
This is like a really interesting one because I think the Polyjuice question is a good question. Like, you know, like if somebody were to like if Crabbe and Goyle had somehow like woken up in the broom cupboard, found their way to the Slytherin common room, walked in and saw themselves sitting there talking to Malfoy, like you would expect that they would be like, what the heck is going on?
Right.
But not that they would go mad. And then on that same note, like I think Hermione is the one who's like warning Harry of this particular situation. The only credence I think it offers to the argument is like Hermione, for example, if she ran into a version of herself and she spent the whole last year using a time turner, she like even a version of her that's not expecting to see herself would probably be like, I understand why I'm seeing myself. I don't know why that me is appearing to me now.
Yeah.
You know, but like at the very least, it's like there are two of me right now. Like,
right.
You know,
like that's the thing. Like, so there's no doubt, like if Harry bursts into Hagrid's hut in Prisoner here and like sees himself, like past him is going to be really like, what's going on? But I don't think he's going to go mad, but like, because he's going to be completely out of the loop because that version of him has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
On the flip side, if, like, let's say going around the school, Hermione, like, yeah, glimpses herself, you know, like gives herself a little wink one day, like future her sees past her and it's just like, hey, you know, it's like that, like past Hermione isn't going to lose her mind at all because she's been doing this all years and knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, she might be surprised that like she crossed paths with herself.
Right.
But like she would know, like, that was me. I know what's happening.
Right.
You know, like, it's not going to be that surprising to her.
Yes. Yeah. I think the explanation is like one of those where it's like, it's plausible enough to where you're like, man, it would be really weird if I ran into another version of myself just going on the street. Like that would screw with you in a pretty big way.
Right.
And so to me, I think that this is like one of those like plot convenience answers a little bit where it's like the easiest thing would be to just go and talk to the other people and like let them know what's up. But I think possibly the other potential issue is that, like, especially from a writing perspective, what happens in Harry Potter when it comes to time travel has always happened the whole time.
Yeah.
So you would never have the course of events that led to the evening that you had if you interjected. So like if Harry had burst in and told them like, hey, no, don't go into the Whomping Willow, like blah, blah, blah. Like they would obviously not go into the Whomping Willow because then they would be completely informed as to everything that's going to happen. And that would completely screw with like the current time.
But like future him could never come back and warn him not to have done that.
Yes.
Because
exactly.
Future him wouldn't have done it either, because when future him was in the past, future him would have showed up and told him the same thing.
Exactly. So I think the real issue is that like, because timelines are absolute in the world of Harry Potter and time travel, it's like there is no, like maybe that's where it can make you go crazy, is if you broke the laws of time. It's like, that might be like what might ultimately make you go mad.
Right.
Is that it's like if like no matter what, every single time Harry and Hermione are always there. They're always hiding in the woods behind the pumpkin patch or whatever. Like they always throw the stone that hits Harry in the back of the head. Like these are all things that happen the first time. They happen the second time. They will happen in perpetuity all the time and for always until like, you know, like because they can't not.
Right.
And so that would be the thing. Like if for some reason he did go and burst in, it's like he didn't experience that the first time, and he had to experience that the first time. So it's like, it makes time so wimbly-wombly.
It does. And it's like, then there is, I mean, the example at the end of Prisoner, where like Harry does see himself, but like that thinks it's his dad, is I think that's a really clever one.
It
too,
is. Yes, it is very clever. Because like that's like Harry knowing he has the power of what he thinks his father would be able to do. And it's like his own belief that it was his dad and his knowledge that he did in the past that allows him to do it in the future.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's like this, like, does that make sense? It's like, no,
it's like, that's unbelievable. Bootstrap paradox.
Yeah.
Is that what's going
like,
on there?
Yeah. Something a little bit like that, but it's like, that's a very fun one. So I don't think it would actually make you go mad, especially if you were like, if you'd been using time magic a lot, like you might almost expect something like this to happen eventually.
That's what I think too, especially like with Hermione just like running to him from the hallways, or if she's like using the same broom cupboard to like always like step into to like do the time turner so that like,
right,
like they can, you know, she can go through both glass. Like it seems like she would be like landing in approximately the same locations a bunch.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I don't think it's as much of a problem as it is presented to be.
Yeah, but really what it comes down to is that they couldn't or wouldn't ever interject because they didn't know beforehand that they were going to need to use the time turner after the fact, and therefore like maybe that could provide an opportunity for you to do that. Like that's always one of those things where like if you're sitting in your chair and you're like, okay, if time travel exists, future me, come back to me right now in the next 3, 2, 1, and you open your eyes and you look up and it's like, you know, if time travel existed and you remembered this moment happening, then future you, to prove to current you, could travel back to this moment to know that it was going to happen right now.
Right.
You know, like that's like the way that we can all test time travel.
Right.
It's like if it existed, future us would rely, you know, like would, you know, commit to whatever.
Unless future you knows that you can't do that.
Unless future you knows that. Yeah. And that like it would break the rules. Right. It would distort the entire timeline reality. So time travel, always extremely weird. It's always one of those things. And I think everyone who ever introduces it to the story knows the dangers of doing it because it can overpower everything so quickly.
Right. It's like one of those things, like everyone seems to find it like really confusing, but everyone also seems to like sort of love it because everyone keeps using it.
I know. Yeah. It's like whenever it's like, oh, it's time travel. Although that was my number one rule going into
Endgame.
Yes. Avengers Endgame. I was like, not time travel. I'm okay. I want any explanation that's not time travel. And then I struggled watching the whole theater experience because I was like, oh, it's time travel.
It's time travel.
It's like, I did not want it to be time travel.
But it was like, then it's time travel. We were like, oh, we're back in the first movie. Oh, they did the thing. Oh, now they know this. Oh, it's kind of cool. That's I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it ended up working out in some ways. Yeah. Anyway, there you go.
Tony's talking to his dad.
That's kind of special.
Yeah.
That's kind of special. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. Until next time.
Yeah. Tune in next time to Chapter 14, Cornelius Fudge Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.